following views and opinions do not necessarily reflect those of AM 1230 WYTS, its staff, management, or parent company, Clear Channel Broadcasting. Listeners should not use Dr. Kvitko's comments and advice in the place of receiving an actual dental exam.
Brighten your life with a smile that shows the professional touch of Dr. Kvitko.
Time now for Dentally Speaking with Dr. Brian Kvitko on AM 1230 WYTS. Call 821-1230. That's 821-1230 to discuss your dental issues. Now, here's your host, Dr. Kvitko on AM 1230 WYTS.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko here on AM 1230 WYTS. Our show is also known as Everything You've Always Wanted to Know About Dentistry, but We're Too Numb to Ask. Today is April 19th, and I want to wish my son a happy birthday because it's his birthday today. And he is in Colorado. He won't be able to hear this today, but this show is now available on iTunes, and so he's going to download the podcast later. So happy birthday, Brian. April 19th is always a beautiful day in Columbus. I just happened to notice that the weather is so great around this time of year. My wife and I decided it'd be a great time to have a child born, and so far, every April 19th is just gorgeous. I was fortunate enough yesterday to go to the Columbus Clippers home opener. Both my wife and I were guests of our friend Bill and his wife Linda. And even though the Mud Hens beat us 3-1, it was still a great time. And I think there are going to be lots of good times going on at Huntington Park. Looks like the Blue Jackets are going to have to play the best hockey of their lives coming up. I think their next game is Tuesday night back here in Columbus. They want to get back into the playoff picture and keep those playoff beards growing. Hopefully they can win the next two games right here in Columbus. So we want to wish the Blue Jackets well with that. A couple of announcements. Oh, and by the way, today we're going to be interviewing a senior dental student, soon to be a doctor, Jackie Mays. And I'll introduce her here in just a little bit. Announcements are these. Check out page 74 of Capital Style Magazine for a small feature about me. Has my photograph for those of you who have only heard the voice. Also, remember to tune in to NBC4's Daytime Columbus with Gail Hogan this Friday, April 24th at 11 a.m. I'll be on the show with Gail. You'll be able to see the results of the smile makeover that I mentioned, and we had Jen, a woman named Jen, on March 20th and showed the before. I've since completed her makeover, and we will have her on to show the results. On April 29th, at the College of Dentistry, I will be a celebrity guest judge at the Clinical Excellence Day that they hold annually now. It's a really nice event. It's a great event because it, encourages clinical excellence, basically, and that's what we want. We want everybody to graduate and every dentist out there to be practicing excellence. I was honored to be asked to do this last year, and even more honored to be asked back. Keynote speaker for the event will be Dr. Stephen Rasner, and those of you that listened last week know that he was my guest on the show last week, so I think the dental students and the faculty and everyone in attendance is in for a treat when they get to hear Dr. Rasner speak. On April 30th, I'll be an awards presenter at the Clintonville Area Chamber of Commerce's Good Citizens Breakfast. And this is an event for 6th, 7th, and 8th graders, local kids. Kids that are the stars, I guess, if you will, in their class. The kids that are the ones with good grades and who are out there helping in the community. So it's a really worthwhile event, and I'm happy to be a part of that. On Saturday, May 2nd and Sunday, May 3rd, from 11 a.m. until 5 p.m., my staff and I will have a booth at the Columbus Zoo and Aquarium, where Parent Magazine will be having their Family Expo. There'll be thousands of families, so come out and stop by and say hello. I'll be there most of the time. Also, if you'd like to be notified when my book, entitled Dentistry for Kids, What Every Parent Should Know, is available, please call my office at 262-9588 or send us an email to drkvitko@aol.com, and we'll put your name on the list. We'll be happy to let you know as soon as we know. Honestly, the first draft won't be done until the end of May, and so it may be several months, but worthwhile getting your name on the list. That way we'll know who is interested. And now, before we go on with our guest, we'll give out Dr. Kvitko's question of the day. And this is kind of a connection to our guest. She might even know the answer. According to the American Dental Association Survey Center, by what percent has the number of dental graduates in advanced dental education programs increased in the last 4 years or so? And I'm looking, and I'm not sure she knows the answer. I wouldn't really, she might, but I might get her guess here in a little bit. So, according to the American Dental Association Survey Center, what percent has the number of dental graduates in advanced dental education programs increased in the last 4 years? Okay? You can send your guesses to dentallyspeakingonam1230@yahoo.com, and I'll read your guess on the air, or you can call us at 821-1230. Oh, by the way, iTunes, if you go to iTunes, the podcasts, and you type in Dentally Speaking, that's how you'll find us. Right now, there's only a couple up, but there are more coming soon, and eventually we'll have all of them there. I was told if you type in Dr. Kvitko, it'll also come up, but I tried that. It didn't work, so maybe I misspelled my own name. But for now, try Dentally Speaking. So let me go back to introducing my guest. And it is Jackie Mays, soon to be Dr. Jackie Mays. She is going to graduate with a dual degree, both a PhD and a DDS degree, which I think is absolutely amazing. I didn't even know that was possible. And my oldest son, the one whose birthday is today, has his PhD. It took him 5 years at Cornell to get in microbiology, but in 7 years you did your PhD and your dental Doctor of Dental Surgery degree. So I'd like to welcome Jackie to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Thanks for getting up so early and being with us. I really do think it's an impossible challenge, and I was very proud of my son for doing what he did. Can you tell me what made you decide to do this? I mean, it seems like you could have gotten a lot more sleep if you hadn't done this.
Oh, that's very, very true. Throughout the end of high school and also during undergrad, I was very, very focused on becoming a dentist and applying to dental school. However, as part of that preparation, I did 2 summers of research in a lab in Indianapolis, and I was able to get wonderful exposure to research science and how the process of science works. And I was absolutely engaged in that. I actually nearly applied to graduate school rather than dental school. But the thing that made me stay the course, applying to dental schools, was that these scientists all seemed to be slightly frustrated that their research wouldn't necessarily be headed toward the clinics and toward something that would actually be tangible. So I applied to dental schools, and OSU actually gave me a wonderful opportunity and allowed me to do both a dental program and also a graduate program. So in the end, I didn't have to make the decision.
Okay, so they made the schedule work for you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you wanted to be a researcher, you wanted to be the scientist to begin with, but then you also thought dentistry would be kind of neat, or was the research in Indianapolis you were exposed to associated with oral health in some way?
No, it wasn't associated with oral health at all. I was studying cell signaling in a cancer cell line, but I'd wanted to be a dentist for a very long time.
Okay.
I love working with my hands. And doing things that really help people. It was the research that sort of pulled me in a different direction and showed me something that I hadn't been exposed to before and was actually very interested in.
That's neat. I know my son was so excited when he got his first lab coat. He just wanted to be a scientist. And what is your PhD? What will it be in?
So my PhD is actually in oral biology, and that's the science it's multidisciplinary. It focuses on all of the things that relate to the oral cavity. So everything from material science, how to make a better filling material to fill those cavities.
Okay.
To microbiology, understanding the bacteria that are responsible for cavities and gum disease. To physiology, understanding exactly how your taste system works and how your brain knows what exactly you're tasting in your mouth. So it's sort of a wide-ranging field. And that's what my PhD will actually be in.
Well, that's really neat. You've mentioned about 3 things that already I can think of that affect patients on a regular basis. One being some people who wear dentures don't taste their food the same because they don't have the temperature. I don't know if there's any way of triggering that mechanism for someone who is wearing dentures to realize they have ice cream in their mouth instead of just milk, you know? Because let's face it, that's really all ice cream is, but we all love ice cream, but we don't drink milk with our meals, most adults. The other is just the diseases and the oral flora and the things that affect the oral environment. And I have to tell you that I really appreciate the researchers like yourself that do all of the behind-the-scenes work. And then I get the product once it comes to market, and I get to use it, and I'm the one that gets the hugs from the patient or the thank you notes. And I know that it's really all because of you guys that are, you know, doing that work behind the scenes. So one dentist to another, I really appreciate that. Now, I have heard about some great research that's going on at the College of Dentistry, and sounds like your doctoral work is part of this cutting-edge research. So, can you tell us about the immunology research you've been doing?
Sure. I've been fortunate while I was at Ohio State to work with Dr. John Sheridan, whose lab is generally interested in studying interactions between the nervous, endocrine, and immune systems. And that sounds sort of complicated, but we're very interested in learning more about how your stress responses affect the way your immune system works. So what happens, you know, for example, if you're in a very stressful situation and then contract a virus, what will happen to the way your body handles that virus?
I think our listeners know what the immune system is. Can you give a little overview of what the endocrine system is? Just to, you know what I'm saying, break it down for the average person that just woke up.
So your endocrine system, it basically controls your hormones. When you're stressed, your body releases cortisol, which is a stress hormone that most people know about, mm-hmm. That goes through your bloodstream, and that will actually affect the way your immune cells function. Because those cells have receptors for that hormone.
Okay. So I know you work with Dr. Sheridan. You just mentioned that, Sheridan. And if he's anything like the gentleman my son worked under, he's really sad to see you go. What's he going to do now?
Well, I don't know. He's looking for new graduates. So
we need to recruit a replacement.
Exactly.
Do you bring new people in every year I know there's a recruiting process, at least there was for my son, and once a year they'll bring in promising young students who think they want to, you know, get a PhD or a master's. Are we doing the same thing here at OSU, at the college?
It's a little bit different through the dental school. A lot of times students won't apply directly to the oral biology PhD program, but if they see promising students come through the dental school applicant pool, they'll try to recruit those students.
Okay.
And they also bring students into the College of Dentistry from other programs at the university, people who may be interested in oral health research.
Because I was reading in the ADA News about how there's some money available. The name of the article is Extraordinary Opportunity for Dental Research. And it was written by Craig Palmer. It's out of Bethesda, Maryland, which is the National Institute of Health, citing dental research opportunities among the challenge topics that will benefit from significant two-year jumpstart funds. So apparently they have some new NIH grants aimed at accelerating the tempo of research while promoting job creation and economic stimulus. So this is now tied to the government's economic stimulus plan.
Exactly.
And with that in mind, do you think OSU is going to be able to tap into that and maybe accelerate the number of students like yourself, or do you even know?
The challenging thing with these, they call them challenge grants. They're written for 2 years' worth of funding, so they're for short-term projects. And I know that the College of Dentistry is trying their best to apply for as many of these funds as possible. And the deadlines are actually coming up in the next couple of weeks. So everybody's working feverishly at their laptops probably this morning.
It's actually March. Wait a minute. It says the grant's open March 27th, and the deadline is April 27th. So there was a 30-day period there.
Mm-hmm.
And today's the 19th, so you have 8 days, right?
Right.
People have 8 days left. And you can also go, you can submit them to www.grants.gov for those people who are sitting at home and didn't know this. You have 8 days to submit a proposal. That may not be enough time if you're just now learning about it, but you still have some time. And these projects are anticipated to start September 30th, so monies that are available now if you obtain one of these grants the money's available to begin September 30th, right?
Right.
Okay. So that's good, and let's hope we have many, many more guys and gals interested in doing this kind of research that submit those requests for money, because after all, everything we do takes money, and kind of unfortunate, but it does. So Dr. Sheridan is doing some pretty neat research himself, and of course, working under him, I see that he's worked in oral biology, molecular virology, immunology, and medical genetics. And he's a faculty member at the College of Medicine's Department of Molecular Virology, Immunology, and Medical Genetics. Must have been an honor to work under him.
It was. He's a wonderful scientist, and he has sort of he's involved in so many different areas that he really does a great job tying everything together.
And the neat thing that one of the things I want to point out, he's not a faculty member of the dental college, because these days the dental and medical are pretty much joined, aren't they? You take courses, same courses with the medical students, and share faculty. Am I right?
There's some back and forth, but Dr. Sheridan actually is faculty at the College of Dentistry.
Both? He's both?
He's actually our associate dean for research.
Oh, okay.
So he's very much involved in science at the College of Dentistry.
Okay. Well, he's doing so much, I guess I just missed that part.
It's a long list.
Well, Dr. Sheridan, if you're listening, I apologize. All right, so let's see. We have a little bit of time. We have a few minutes before we have to go to our first break, so we probably have time for one more question, I think. And so how will the immunology research apply to the real world, the day-to-day work that is being done by those of us who are practicing dentists like myself? Because that's what I do. I'm in there doing all of the things people think of when they think of dentistry. They don't know that there are people like you that do what you do, but how's it going to affect me and all of my colleagues?
That's a great question, and a very important one, because if you're doing science in the lab and you can't do anything with it after that, then there's really no benefit to the patient population, which is the ultimate goal of all immunology research. So my work essentially has shown that an intense short-term stressor can actually improve the way the immune system functions in response to an influenza virus. So we use a model of flu infection in mice after giving them an intense short-term stressor, and then we look at the way their immune system responds to that virus. And my work has actually shown that one of the populations of immune cells, the T cell, will actually respond better to the first infection with a flu virus. And then if you look at their memory responses, so these are the things that will protect you against a second infection with the virus, that these responses are actually better as well, so that the immune system will respond faster and with more force.
So let me extrapolate. If I have a flu, or I have the flu and I want to get better faster, all I need is the IRS to call me up and say I'm going to be audited?
Well, that would be great. Because we don't actually do our research in humans, it's hard to find exactly where those parallels are.
But you're hoping to find what type of stress it would take in a human to make us heal quicker from the flu, for example. Are we trying to find that?
That's sort of a long-reaching goal. We're really interested in finding what neuroendocrine mediator it is, or, you know, plural, that are actually changing the immune system and making it respond better, so that hopefully that could be added
to a
vaccination protocol or something like that in the future.
Okay, so we're not going to use the IRS to cure the flu. Because I think right now they give most people the shakes. Anyway, okay, so... And I'm sorry, I guess I was jumping to conclusions, because I realize it takes a lot of years to... You have to find a marker, then you have to understand how it works, and then you have to develop a system or a drug to change it.
No, but it's important to have an end goal.
Yeah,
With the patient in mind.
Well, that's true. That's great. Okay, now I think we will go to break here in just a second. Remember, our question of the day is, and it was kind of a long one, so I better just find it and read it again. The number of the dental graduates that are in a postgraduate training program has gone up, according to the American Dental Association, and by what percent is the number of dental graduates gone up that are in advanced dental education programs? Okay. Our show is available by podcast, and let me just give that out right now so I don't forget. go to www.am1230wyts.com. When you're there, hold your mouse over the on-air button and a list of all of the on-air talent, and I use that word loosely in my case, but the word Dr. Kvitko will pop up, and click on that. It takes you to my page, and there's a spot that says click here for podcasting. You're listening to Dunnelly Speaking here on AM 1230 WYTS, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko. Our show is also known as Everything You've Always Wanted to Know About Dentistry, but we're too numb to ask. And I have a guest in the studio with me today, Jackie Mays, soon to be Dr. Jackie Mays, both a PhD in oral biology and immunology, as well as a doctor of dental surgery degree, correct?
Correct.
Okay, I want to make sure I get that right. Now, before the break, we were talking about your research and what your PhD work has been in, and although it may have dental applications down the road, it doesn't have any immediate dental applications, so I'm just curious what kind of research is going on in the dental school now that is directly dental related.
Sure. And there are a lot of people at the college working very hard in actually translating this research to something that will be directly applicable, you know, at your chairside to work with patients. Our endodontic department has a long-standing program looking at pain control during root canal treatment and exactly which anesthetic protocols are best.
Right, and you know that root canal strikes fear in people's hearts, and it shouldn't, but it does.
It does.
So we're working on that. That's good.
We're working on that. And our laboratory actually has collaborations with several periodontists, so people who work with gum disease, looking at how stress affects wound healing in the oral cavity. So a lot of what happens during dental treatment is the creating and healing of wounds during gum surgery and things like that. And we found actually that if somebody is under a lot of stress at the time of surgery, they'll actually heal slower.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
So we're trying to understand that a little bit better to help those patients.
So we need to, you know, that might be a case for someone maybe being sedated or know they're going to be sedated, so then they're not as stressed when they show up, possibly.
That's an excellent point.
Yeah. That's pretty neat. Anything else? Are those two?
Those are the two big ones. But we also have a couple of big research groups looking, as I mentioned before, at the bacterial profiles of what exactly causes cavities in children and the things that contribute to gum disease.
Seems to go back and forth between strep mutans and lactobacillus, correct? Is it still going back and forth?
Correct, and they actually use molecular profiling now so that they can look at...
Is that legal? That sounds like, that sounds like, you know, profiling.
As far as I know, it's legal.
Okay, we can still profile bacteria.
But they've found a whole host of bugs that we were never able to culture in the laboratory before. That actually seem to be responsible for a lot of these diseases.
Oh, really?
That they can only pick up using PCR and other things.
It's kind of microbugs.
Microbugs.
So that's why we seem to be going back and forth between the two, because there were other ones in there that we weren't picking up.
There are thousands of other bugs in there.
Okay. Well, that's, see, I learned something today. Try to learn something every day. I guess that means I can go home now. Okay, it's your show. There you go. You can finish up.
Thanks.
Anyway, all right, now, in talking about Dr. Sheridan, and you corrected me as the Associate Dean of Research in the college, there is a comprehensive training in oral and cranial facial sciences program known as CTOC that he manages, and that is news to me, and I am curious, could you give me some more insight about this program? What does it involve?
Sure, so the program's designed to train dental researchers, essentially.
Okay, so learning how to be a researcher.
Right. And okay. There are a couple of different components. There are people who have finished their PhDs who come to the college as postdoctoral researchers who are supported by the program. There are dental students doing summer research projects who are supported by the program.
Is that like summer teeth, summer here, summer there? No? I think I threw her off a little bit. Anyway, I'm sorry. Go back. Go what were you saying?
And then the main part of the program is designed to train DDS PhD students like myself.
Okay.
So people who are going to be clinician scientists of the future. And there are two reasons that this is such an intense focus, actually, in the whole country right now. The first is to drive innovation in dentistry, as you mentioned earlier, and to keep dentists at the forefront of oral health. So to keep...
So that I get all the credit on
Monday
mornings.
Right, so that you get all the credit and all the hugs.
Yeah.
Because there are new things coming out that will actually help patients to a greater extent. Secondly, there's a dearth of dental educators at schools in the United States. And the National Institutes of Dental and Craniofacial Research, which is the dental part of the National Institutes of Health, is supporting these DDS PhD programs in order to keep the faculty at dental schools in the U.S. At the cutting edge of research and also education.
Good, good. I know that's actually very difficult for a college of any kind because of funding. To try to stay on the cutting edge means having new equipment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Every new technique requires a device. And I know, for example, on the clinical side, there's this machine or this process called a CEREC crown, C-E-R-E-C. And I've had it in my office for 3 years. I think other folks have maybe had it a little longer, but there are still a lot of dentists that don't have it at all. And at the dental school, they have, I think, one, they have a selective course. So certain students, seven or so every quarter, are allowed to sign up and learn. But we're not yet to the point where, because of funding, I assume, we're not to the point where everybody can learn or graduate knowing this process. And with the CTOC program, in their attempt to keep everybody on the cutting edge, I'm assuming there are research dollars that allow this to happen. I mean, it's almost like there's more money for research than there is for clinical training. Am I right? Or
I'm actually not sure how the numbers on that break down.
Yeah.
But the college does have a large training grant that comes from the dental part of the NIH.
Okay.
To fund this DDS PhD program, and I actually sat down and calculated exactly how much my 7 years of dental school have cost, and
oh, really?
A staggering figure, around $350,000 that was
wow.
supported both by the NIH and also by the College of Dentistry.
Wow.
So it's been a phenomenal opportunity for me to participate in this program.
That's great. That's great. When we come back after the break, I want to ask you what you plan on doing after you graduate with your dual degree. And so we'll talk more about that. And so let me think. I do have to give out a couple of guesses to the question of the day before we go to break. We had an emailed guest from Gail who says she thinks 10%, that there's 10% more graduates in advanced dental education than 4 or 5 years ago. And one from Barry that says 2%. So neither of those is correct, but they are in the ballpark. So remember that when you send your other guesses. You're listening to Dentally Speaking on AM 1230. Here with Dr. Kvitko and my guest Jackie Mays, and we'll be back after the break. You're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko. Thanks for getting up so early on this Sunday morning and listening and tuning in. Remember, the show is now available on iTunes by typing in Dentally Speaking into the search box. And we also are able and interested to take any questions that you might have, so you can call us at 821-1230. Feel free to call in with any question you might have for me or my guest, Jackie. All right, but in the meantime, I'm going to keep asking Jackie questions. And so what I want to find out is, what are you going to do after you graduate with your DDS and your PhD in oral biology? What are you going to do?
That's a great question, and it took me years to figure that out.
Like seven?
Like seven. More like six.
Oh, six? Okay.
So even though I really like clinical dentistry and I love treating patients,
mm-hmm.
I've decided to focus on my scientific career for a few years in order to gain the experience and expertise that I'll need to be a successful scientist. So I'm actually going to be spending the next 2 years, starting in July, at the National Institutes of Health as a postdoctoral researcher, and I'm hoping to learn as much as possible while I'm there.
Wow, that's like, isn't that considered the most prestigious thing you can do as a grad student or a postdoctorate student?
It's a wonderful institution, and they have phenomenal resources, scientists from all over the world who are experts in their field. So I'm very, very excited to be headed there.
Where is that located? Is that in Atlanta?
No, actually, they have a couple of different locations, but the main campus is in Bethesda, Maryland.
Okay.
So it's just a touch north of D.C.,
All right. So since you've chosen to pursue research, am I right in assuming you'll be putting down your dental drill?
That's correct.
Which means you'll be the only dentist that people aren't afraid of, right? So, yeah, you don't have to fear Dr. May because she doesn't have a drill or won't have a drill anymore. Have you taken your boards? Already done the clinicals?
I have.
So literally, you are done using the dental drill.
Well, I still have a few more patients to see before I can finish dental school.
Okay, and I'm sure they don't fear you anyway because you seem like a nice person. But now, I want to talk a little bit more about the National Institute of Health, but what I want to do is talk a little bit about you first, okay? So, I'm curious, what do your parents do for a living? I mean, are they scientists too, or what do they do?
No, and actually, I wasn't as lucky as your children to come from a home where, you know, the parents really understand the process of higher education. My mother was trained as a cosmetologist, and then my father is actually a truck driver.
Okay.
So both of my parents went to trade school, but they really always encouraged my sisters and I to work very, very hard, and impressed upon us that working hard and having a good work ethic.
And school is where it's at.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
would pay off in the future.
Which is what my parents did. My father was a tool and die maker at Chrysler, which is a trade, just like you were saying. And my mom was a stay-at-home mom, occasional part-time helper in the office at the school. So they must be very proud of you.
They are. They're very, very much looking forward to the graduation in June.
Now, I also noticed in something that I read about you that you must be married because I saw another name.
Correct.
What does your husband do or what is his background?
So my husband's actually a mechanical engineer.
Oh, okay.
And he works in the field of green energy. And his company actually, which is based in New Zealand, makes equipment that they put on wind turbines. That monitors the vibrations, so they're actually able to predict when these turbines will break.
When the bearings are going bad?
Mm-hmm. And when they'll need maintenance. So he actually flies all over the world.
Wow.
Doing training and installation for the wind turbines.
He doesn't have to get up on the turbine himself, does he?
No, he does.
And he does?
It scares me a little bit.
Really? Because those are, are they like 100 feet tall? Or?
Some of them are taller, some of them are 300 feet. Some of them are big enough that they actually will put elevators in the middle.
Wow.
So that, which he actually likes, because then he doesn't have to climb the ladder.
Right, yeah.
I subscribe, all the way up there.
Subscribe to National Geographic, and they did an article about those turbines, and they showed just the blade laying on the ground. And they had something like 28 or 30 people kind of standing side by side. That's how big those blades are.
Yeah, they're massive.
you don't realize. Now, your research, my son is doing research in one of those rooms that you have to wear the biohazard outfit, you know?
Uh-huh.
It's like a level 3. Is your research anything like that?
Most of the flu viruses that we work with are what's considered a level 2 pathogen.
Okay.
So
not
we
animal.
Don't have to quite go to the biohazard suits.
Okay, so he's a level 3, and then the one more, there's level 4, which his wife doesn't want him to do, but you know what I'm talking about.
Right.
Yeah. I know in level 3 even, anything he brings into the lab can never come out.
Right.
And he has to shower on his way in and on his way out. Like if he forgets, if he brings his laptop in, he lost his laptop. He cannot take it back out ever again. But anyway, so yours is level 2, and what about brothers and sisters? Any brothers and sisters doing anything like this?
I have 2 sisters. I have one big sister who actually lives out in the D.C. area, and she's an aerospace engineer who works with satellites.
Wow.
And then I have a little sister, so I'm stuck right in the middle between the two of them.
I'm a middle child, too.
And my little sister is actually a math teacher.
Very good, very good. Boy, some smart, some brainiac kids. Mom and Dad, I know her proud, so, and so she's already a math teacher, I see, because she didn't go on to get a master's or a PhD.
Right.
You're
right.
The middle child, but you're finishing up after the others, which is understandable. That's you're commended to be for staying in school that long and doing all of that work. Okay. Do you see, and I'm looking here at the clock, and it looks like we have about another minute before we have to go to a break. So what I might do is ask you the question and not necessarily get your answer until after the break. And the question is, what advice would you give to a young person considering a career in dentistry? And as a follow-up, do you recommend this dual degree to other folks? Okay, so it's a two-part question.
Okay.
All right, and you can ponder your answer. And we will get your answer when we come back. So, I will give out a couple more email guesses that we have to our question of the day when we return. And hopefully you'll stay with us. You're listening to Dentally Speaking here on AM 1230 WYTS, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kavitko. And today in the studio with me, I have as a guest Jackie Mays, who is soon to graduate with a DDS and a PhD degree in oral biology. And before the break, I asked Jackie what she plans on doing. I'm sorry, no, we already covered that. What advice she would give to a young person who's considering dentistry as a career, and would she recommend that a person do this dual degree like she has done at Ohio State. So, there you go.
Thanks. So I'm going to tackle the easy one first.
Okay.
To anybody who is considering dentistry as a career, I recommend that you find out as much as possible about dentistry and about people like Dr. Kavitko, who are excellent clinicians and are really doing a wide range of things. Observing in dental offices is a great way to do this. Reading as much as you can on the internet and other places about dentistry and about what it is that dentists do. Before I got to dental school, I'd never seen a denture before, and I didn't understand how they worked. So the more you
sometimes
know...
Sometimes we don't understand how they work. It's amazing they can work at all, you
it
know?
It is. It really is. But the more you know ahead of time, the more you'll know whether it's the right type of career for you, and also the more prepared you'll be once you get to dental school. And you can help yourself the most by really working hard and as hard as you can in school so that you don't slight yourself of any opportunities that you might want to pursue in the future.
Very good answer, and boy, there's some things I want to expand on. So before you give the other half of your answer, what you just said is, I mean, you, making the most out of the opportunities you've been given, I know that I learned how to do some things in dental school that I really wanted to learn that weren't necessarily things they let undergraduate students do, but I showed up having read all of my notes, read the chapter a couple times, and I said to the instructor, I said, if it's all right, I'd like to do this with your help. And they looked at me kind of funny because this was not a procedure we were allowed to do. It was a graft. In your case, it might be a molar root canal, which the undergraduate students aren't necessarily given, right? But if you show up all prepared, and what he did is he said, I think what he meant to say was, okay, smart aleck, tell me what you're going to do. He didn't say smart aleck, but he just said, oh, tell me what you're going to do. And I did. I went through step one, step two. I'm going to do a partial thickness flap. I'm going to do this, this, and that. And it was like, oh, okay, this guy is prepared. So go ahead and do steps one, two, and three and call me. And I think if you taking advantage of the opportunities you're given, working hard, maybe staying up late, getting up early, are great. And also, this observation is paramount. You have to know what you're getting into, because it's not an easy profession. There are times when it's just people don't think it's hard work, but it can be. It can be very hard work, and you have to really like what you're doing. So I think that was very good advice. And now the dual degree. What would you say about that?
So in the same spirit as the end of your last point, you really need to know what you're getting into. Being a clinician scientist is very, very different from being a clinical dentist. A lot of people will still practice part-time, and they'll still see patients one or two days a week DDS, PhD type folk. But what they do primarily is research and teaching, which is a very different sort of career path. And it's, I know I'm biased, but I think it's wonderful because you have so much variety built in. You can be teaching one day in the lab, really being stimulated by these questions that you're asking the next day, and then you're able to, in many cases, bring that into the clinic and sort of translate that to your patients, not necessarily directly the research that you're doing, but sort of the whole spirit of the thing. And for anybody who thinks that this is an interesting sort of way to structure your professional life, I would certainly recommend doing a DDS PhD program and continuing with that sort of thing. Ohio State's a wonderful place to be engaged in a dual degree program. There are 11 dental schools in the country out of the 59 dental schools in the United States that have formal dual degree programs, and there are others that support that type of program. So there's a select group of institutions who do train clinician scientists.
So only 25% or less, actually. I guess it's more like 20%, a fifth of them even have the dual. And how would somebody find that out, which 11 they are? Is it something that they can go online? Or I'm not going to ask you to name all 11. We wouldn't remember anyway. But
I
how would
think
they?
I could. but most
actually, they don't need the list. They just come to OSU, right?
Exactly. most schools will list through their research websites information about their DDS PhD programs, and also the National Institutes of Dental and Craniofacial Research also have listings on their websites of the programs that they support through these dental schools.
Okay, well, thanks. And that's, and I think it's time for another break. And when we come back, I have a few more questions. It looks like I'm going to run out of time before I run out of questions. But it's been very interesting, and I hope my listeners are finding it that way as well. When I come back, we'll give the answer to today's question of the day. You're listening to Dentally Speaking here on AM 1230 WYTS.
So hear me when I'm saying, smiling faces.
Welcome back. You're listening to Dentally Speaking here with Dr. Kvitko and senior dental student, soon-to-be Dr. Jackie Mays, both DDS and PhD, PhD being in oral biology. And I think we've had a good show with lots of insight, some things for young folks who think they would like to become a dentist themselves, would like to have the dual degree. Some information from Jackie on how neat that can be and how it's going to benefit her in her future plans, which in her case is working at the National Institute of Health for a 2 or 3 year postdoc. What is it?
It's actually 3 to 5.
Oh, wow. 3 to 5. Okay. And that's basically the definition of a professional student, isn't it? Somebody who like never graduates or never finishes completely. No, I'm just kidding. But it is something that people should hopefully come to appreciate, all the time and effort that researchers go through to get those degrees and to bring the information to people. The answer to today's question of the day is there's been an increase of 4% of dental graduates that are now in advanced dental education programs. And this is over about the last 4 to 5 years. And that's not huge, but when we hear about the economy, and I've read some articles about how more students are going to grad school to escape the job hunt, I guess, and obviously that's not what you did, and that's not what most people are doing. You would think maybe those numbers will go up if we visit this question again in a year or so. Maybe those numbers will have gone up, but for now it's 4%. And I don't think what you just went through is anything somebody would want to do just to avoid a job search. Am I right? It's really intense.
Well, it depends on who you ask. My husband might argue the converse.
Oh, really? Okay. He's wondering when you're going to get a real job?
Yeah.
Although the NIH, that is, there's a stipend, I assume, something modest, but at least a stipend, right?
There is. It's a lot more like a real job than what I'm doing right now.
Okay. Well, that's neat. Let's see. We have a couple minutes. I don't want to ask us anything that you don't have time to answer. I do want to ask you one thing. I know you won first place in the PhD Resident Award at last year's Research Day. Are you also going to be participating in Clinical Excellence Day?
I will be, actually, okay. And my patient has it on his calendar to be there, and he's very, very excited that all these dentists are going to be talking about his treatment.
Okay.
So I'm looking forward to the day. It should be very interesting.
Good. I might see you. They split up the students, and there's different groups of judges that go around, so I may not actually be one of your judges, but I'm sure whatever it is you've done, I'll think you've done a great job. Let's see. How are we doing on time? Okay, we have a couple minutes. In your opinion, why is it that about 40% of people in the U.S. don't go to the dentist on a regular basis? Do you have any ideas on that? I mean, you've just spent 7 years at the dental school.
I have a little bit of insight. We run an emergency dental clinic, and we see people who have dental emergencies through the school. And a lot of times these are people who don't seek regular dental care. So I think they would fall within that 40% of people who don't come in unless they absolutely have to. And a lot of the people are either uninsured or underinsured, so it's
cost.
Nope. So it's beyond their financial means to really seek regular dental care. And then another portion, they're simply afraid of the dentist.
Okay, cost and fear, and sometimes fear of the cost.
Exactly.
No, I would agree. That's what I seem to be hearing. I do some man on the street kind of interviews when I travel, and sometimes I travel just to do interviews and get interviews from folks all over the country. And that's what I'm hearing. But then, so the more we can talk about dentistry, the more we can make people relax about how it's not going to be unpleasant. It's not going to be uncomfortable. We're here working for them. I hope some of these people will get up their nerve to come in. I spoke to a gentleman over the weekend who hasn't been to a dentist in 34 years. And the reason he gave was, first, because he didn't have any problems. And I said, so meaning because it doesn't hurt. And then the next thing he said was, I kind of got it out of him that he was kind of afraid of that it might hurt. And he says, because, you know, if you touch a nerve, doesn't matter how athletic you are, how strong you are, you're still going to feel it. And I said, but not if you're numb. And, of course, they're doing research on that at the College of Dentistry. So let's hope that through the research that you're doing and the work that we're doing through the show and in my office, that we can get more people to be less afraid of the dentist and come in and get the care that they need. And before I forget, May 1st is a free oral cancer screening at the College of Dentistry. Am I right?
Correct.
Okay. And they can call 292-2751 if they want more information. Okay, I want to make sure we get that out there. Thank you so much for joining me. You're listening to Dentally Speaking here on AM 1230 WYTS with Dr. Kvitko. Please tune in next Sunday morning at 9.